You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at wearelibertarians.com.
All right, let's get back to some boring subjects.
Understand the risk to our country.
Freedom brings people together.
You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at wearelibertarians.com.
Well, today is the end of my broadcast career as we have Rob Kendall on. So years from now, I will be doing a video apologizing for platforming him. And I am looking forward to the conversation and having him thank me for his radio career as it's taking off now. So, as you know, I've launched many people like Rob Kendall, Harry Price, Jeff Vibbert. Long string of winners. One day I'll be there too. Stay tuned right after these messages.
Warning. This show is for adults by semi-adults, so the language is sometimes strong and offensive.
I don't know what I said.
Welcome to the Chris Spangle Show. Our goal is to help you sound smarter while talking to your friends. If you struggle to understand politics, we explain it from an independent, libertarian point of view. With all of the irreverence it deserves, we toss out the screaming heads, put people before political parties, and give context to the news to make you think. Now, here's our host, Chris Spangle, a 15-year veteran of politics and media.
Thank you for joining us here on the Chris Spangle Show. My name is Chris Spangle. If you've never heard us before, please subscribe now in your podcast app. Check us out at WeAreLibertarians.com. My co-host is Harry Price. He is back in the back. Say hello, Harry.
Hey, everybody.
And then our guest today will be Rob Kendall, like I said. First, I want to start by thanking our patrons, members of Wall Plus, W-A-L Plus. You get all kinds of great, great benefits of being a patron. If you go to joinwallplus.com, especially the ad-free shows, the entire back catalog, you can go back and listen to all the times Rob Kendall was on the show. You can listen to the Rob Kendall Show, the podcast that was hosted in here in 2013, but only if you're a Wall Plus subscriber. And we want to thank especially our $100 a month members, Casey Feldposh, Lars Nordskog, Jake Edel, Matthew Durbin, Ryan Holt, Christy Avery, and Jason Doolittle. Now, we have...
I would be real worried about what's on those, but I've been so offensive since 2013 that I feel like people would be like, boy, he's really gotten worse.
You're not even close. Like, you're so milquetoast compared to the people that we've had on this network. Like, few people realize that I am one of the first hosts of a trans podcast in history with Creating Maya and Maya Axton, who came to our 100th episode with a fully loaded AK-47 or something. What was it, Harry?
It was an AR-15, okay.
And pointed it at Joe Ruiz's wife, and she sweared to never come back again.
You said this years ago, and I thought this was astute. The difference between Rob and the rest of Wall is Rob has something to lose.
Yes, and, Rob has a career. He is now the host of what I assume will be called the Rob Kendall Show on WIBC. He is, it's the biggest talk radio station here in Indiana. So we're very proud of Rob. As we mentioned in 2013, we had Rob here on the network. And so I'd like you to thank me for your career and for giving you a start.
Thank you for everything you've done for me. No matter how high or far I go, I will know that you and Harry Price are the reason that I am where I am.
See, that is grade A ass kissing. And that's one of the reasons that Rob has his own radio show and I'm stuck on the internet. Because he knows how to kiss ass, Harry.
Yeah, well, you know, someone's got to do it.
Well, you know, and it's taken me a long, very high, very, very long way. You know, you've never lived until you've been responsible for a libertarian candidate for governor getting 300,000 votes.
Well, you did way more for the libertarians last year than I did. Rob Kendall used it. You know, now Rob is getting his own radio show because his co-host has left. And Rob, you've caused more co-hosts to leave than I have. What was it? Why are you getting your own show? What was the impetus for the chicks on the right got the radio show? Then one of the chicks left. They added you for some mysterious reason to the chicks on the right show. Yeah. And then probably the secret footage. And then you got... then now your co-host is leaving. So what's going on with the show?
Well, if you, I'm proof that if you harass and demean your coworkers for long enough, you can become a star. And
Harry, you son of a bitch. No, I mean, Rob, you told me years ago that this was your goal. You worked in a closet in Brownsburg at a great little station there that, you know, like 14 people could hear. And then you got a weekend show on the local radio station. You worked your way up. You got a shot in the afternoons. And now you've got your own show. Congratulations. That's really cool.
Thank you. Yeah, it's in all seriousness. I mean, you know, you guys are from Central Indiana, so you understand the importance of WIBC. And for many of us, we grew up, that was the station of record. And to be there is awesome. And I, in all seriousness, as much as I despise you, Chris, and love Harry, that I feel like our little family here at We're Libertarians, of which I'm an extended member, has always been a huge, in all seriousness, a huge supporter and a big proponent of what I do, because I think we all know that regardless of what you think about me personally, I hold everyone accountable.
Yeah. So Rob last year went to bat for Don Rainwater. Don Rainwater went out in the Indiana gubernatorial election with the right message, the message we've talked about here, which is COVID is serious. It is real. You need to take precautions. You need to be fully informed with what is going on with accurate information. And then you need to make the best decision for your family. And lockdowns and shutting down businesses and telling people they can go to the grocery part of Walmart, but not the gardening part, is all lunacy. And it isn't going to work. And John Hopkins this week released a study basically saying that the lockdowns had no marginal effect on actually preventing the spread of the disease. It was a complete failure. And Don Rainwater went from 1% of the gubernatorial race in our previous campaign to 13%, was it, Rob? He came in second place in 30 counties of 92.
Yeah, 33 counties overall. And I hope, and look, I did it because our governor is a goof and he's a loser and he's a liar. And the Republican Party in Indiana are goofs, losers, and liars. And the Democrats offer nothing here. They're worse, if that's possible. And so the only opportunity is that people will be inspired to break away from the Republican Party and start thinking independently. And the Libertarians offer some semblance of that. And I thought Don was a guy worth supporting. And I hope that that will translate into more people free thinking, because there's two very important races this year in Indiana, the Secretary of State's race. Jeff Maher is a phenomenal guy running for the Libertarians, and the U.S. Senate race, in which Todd Young, who is a complete liar, loser, goof, and disgrace, is the will once again be Mitch McConnell's appointed nominee for the Republican Party.
I kind of like Todd Young.
I know you do. I know. I mean,
I prefer I prefer Todd Young to Braun.
Well, but here's the thing. The difference is Todd Young goes out, and this past summer was on a Stop Washington Waste tour with the mayor. I think it was AFP who was with. Todd Young added $9 trillion to the federal deficit while he was in the majority in the Republican-led Congress. That is complete hypocrisy. And this is what the Republican Party in the state does, and Republicans across the country do, is they look at people and they say, yeah, we suck and we lie to you every time we run and say we're going to shrink government or hold people accountable. And we don't do it. But you don't want Democrats in there because, well, then there might be an abortion factory on every corner. And you sure don't want that.
Sure.
And the hypocrisy of Todd Young to go on a Stop Washington Waste tour. He's not mad there's waste. He's mad now he's not the guy doling out the waste, because that's how he buys a secure political future.
Yeah, I mean, I'd argue if I could. I mean, he's on a podcast that I produce called Leaders and Legends, and says his favorite book is Economics in One Lesson by Hazlitt. You know, he's foundationally, this is the problem with Indiana Republicans, is that they are not like the crazy breed of Republican that you represent. They're like a very thoughtful Mitch Daniels type Republican. I probably am closer to that philosophically more often than not. And there's a long, decent track record of good governance by Indiana Republicans compared to other Republicans, definitely Democrats. Philosophically, they talk the right game, but the outcomes aren't there. Like, that's the problem, is exactly what you're saying, is no matter what Todd Young tells me his favorite book is, he doesn't seem to actually enact it in his principles.
Well, and so this is the thing. If I were to tell you, I were to say, here's what the party has done over the past 2 years. Tell me, are there Democrats or Republicans? Largest tax increase in state history, largest budget in state history, tried to put you in jail for not wearing a mask, shut down tens of thousands of businesses, closed thousands of businesses, put over 1 million people out of work. They've tried ridiculous bills like trying.
Oh, we lost Rob. I'll continue. Trump CDC was the one that shut down the all these businesses, initiated the lockdowns, passed all the, like, all the Republicans running around going, this is Joe Biden's terrible economy, look at this inflation. Who do you think passed two stimulus bills? And Google, Trump wants a bigger stimulus than Nancy Pelosi, and you'll find articles where Trump is saying Nancy Pelosi's spending bill didn't go far enough. Like, at every corner, like, what have Republicans and Democrats been right about over the last couple years, Harry?
Exactly. And even when they do get in power, it's not like they try to roll back anything or take any of the grains of sand back. They're more just like, whoa, 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 we're just going to pump the brakes on that. Wait 2 years and then we'll let you do what you want. But like different with purple on it and something different color spin on it.
I made an egregious mistake and touched my touch screen there. And I wasn't supposed to do that, apparently, on this streaming service you use.
That's OK. We just, you know, like, I'm not. And we separate the virus and the pandemic from government action on it and try to make that distinction for the little brains who think that if you're anti-mandate, you're anti-vaccine or anti, you know, like you don't think COVID is real or whatever. But in terms of the government response that was initiated by your boy and the fiscal response to the pandemic, like, what have Republicans and Democrats been right about over the last couple of years and how they've managed all this?
Oh, we're done ripping on Todd Young. Did I miss that? Is that section of the show over with?
No, I mean, you can keep going. We just, I was like trying to keep the show going. You know, I'll teach you how to be a radio host eventually.
Well, I didn't know. I mean, I'm not used to using the streaming platform that you're using, which is great. And Harry looks phenomenal, by the way. I didn't know that if I accidentally touched, I touched the screen there, that would kick me off. No. You're 100% right. Republicans and Democrats have totally failed society. And the one guy, well, for the most part, consistently has been Ron DeSantis, that has said, look, I'm going to allow you to live your life as you see fit. I'm going to allow you to continue to enjoy liberties and freedoms as guaranteed you under the Constitution. And think about how bad the rest of the government across this country has been, where this guy's a front runner for the Republican nomination just on that. He hasn't done anything special, no major tax reform, no incredible infrastructure project. He literally just said, you can live your life. And people go, that sounds pretty good.
Yes. But does it not also kind of speak to your business? Let's talk about your business and the way that information is conveyed. It's really easy now to control what people think. If you just repeat Ron DeSantis is right or Joe Rogan is a racist and use some selective clips to kind of portray somebody in a certain light. Do you think that Ron DeSantis is getting his due from your business, your kind of the conservative industrial complex in that? Like, because, and I say this because how many times are Republicans going to get fooled that this is the next savior to come in and bring us limited government? And then Ron DeSantis is really just a complete narcissist looking for attention. You know, he's kind of being hero worshipped and they're not scratching the surface. And then he becomes their nominee. And he governs as poorly as Donald Trump does.
Well, and that's a phenomenal point. First one you made today. Good job. I'm really proud of you. But this is a mistake that both sides make every single time there's a presidential nomination. Think about in 08, the Republicans. Oh, my God, there's nobody good to run. If only Fred Thompson would run. Comes in and he was there for about 9 seconds and that was the end of that. Then in 2012, oh, there's nobody good to run. If only Rick Perry would run. Within, 3 weeks, it's oops. The Democrats were the same way in 2020, in which, oh, there's nobody good to run. What if Bloomberg would get in there? And, you know, we're looking, rather than looking inward to ourselves and saying government is the problem, and no matter who you put in there, that they're always going to be a problem because government is inherently the problem. We keep looking for people to solve the problem.
Yeah. If only we just get the right Republican, or if only we, you know, and the voting public at large seems to be in that whipsaw where Donald Trump isn't doing the job. Let's put in Joe Biden. well, Joe Biden's not doing the right job. Let's put in another Republican. I mean, Republicans are going to have an enormous year in 2022 and 2024. And it's not going to change because you're not changing the fundamental root of the problem, which is the bureaucratic governance that we have, the bureaucracy. How do we start hacking away at that? How do we start making fundamental real change? Because the celebrity stuff doesn't seem to be doing it.
Well, first of all, can I ask Harry where one gets a hat like that?
Yeah.
Which, what do you mean, like the jacket or the ears?
This well, oh, I didn't realize that they're not one thing. I didn't realize it was not. Oh, that's even more impressive. I thought that was sort of an ensemble because they go well together. That's really, it's like when Steve Martin on Saturday Night Live had the arrow that went through his head. It was really a hat. Oh, well, that's even more impressive. Both, I guess.
Oh, yeah. The it's a Razer Kraken Kitty edition headset that you can pick up. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. The ears just actually light. If you notice, like, it's still bright in here, but the ears actually do light up.
What was the brand again? The
Razer. Razer Kraken Kitty edition.
That's quite impressive. No, to answer your question, Chris, I think the biggest issue for people is the willingness to walk away from tribalism. We saw this in 2020 in our state, in which how many people would say, oh, yeah, Holcomb, those lockdowns, the mandates, the you know, the business closures. Yeah, that's all terrible.
I'm scared. Give me a solution.
Yeah. And yet they would say, well, you know, I'm going to vote for Republicans and for the General Assembly because they've told me they'll hold him accountable. 2 years later, the guy still has an emergency declaration that's gone on for 23 months now. I mean, people have to be willing to walk away on Democrat and Republican turf from the tribe if the tribe is not serving the people, and neither tribe is serving the people.
Yeah. Go ahead, Harry.
I was just like, yeah, and it's eventually going to start really showing itself. Well, Indiana, which is poised to become the capital of the Midwest, is just falling behind the other states that are surrounding us on, well, not Illinois. Illinois is dying. Everyone's watching that. But the other states are, you know, outperforming us in every issue because Holcomb is holding us back. Like, well, that's not how everyone else wants to do it. Then that's done federally this way. And you know, instead of allowing Indiana to grow to become the massive convention city that it can be and it is shown to be.
Well, Harry, let me push back on that. I mean, I see we get all kinds of conventions. We just had the national super, you know, we've got 80,000 jobs now due to the sports stadium strategy. And Rob, you can jump in here too. I mean, when you look at the way that Indiana's government is run, it is more fiscally responsible than Illinois or Michigan. In what ways are we being held back in your mind?
Well, there's a lot of different like rules. Like remember, like even like Indiana was held back for a lot of it for just buying alcohol on Sundays for the longest time. That was like the biggest gripe. You can hear people every race Sunday, and they still have it. Like it's, you still can't buy alcohol before noon, which is stupid. You know it. And then there's the whole marijuana thing. Indiana weed should be grown everywhere. It's, you know, it's a great cash crop. Everyone else around us can smoke it, do everything else around it. But, you know, you cross this border here in I-70, can't do this. You know, it's one of those. And you can watch like a lot of these applications, software as a service things. This is a breadbasket of software as a service. Salesforce has a lot, put in all kinds of things in our tax code to allow software as a service companies to come here. But like, but they try to make it worthy to want them to come here. Move your headquarters here.
So two things. One is it's like saying, because we all this time, well, we're the envy of the Midwest. Well, if you're competing against Illinois, it's like saying I got a D+ and going, hey, I'm the smartest kid. Remember in Animal House? Congratulations, right. Hoover. You're the head of Delta class. 2 C's, 2 D's, and an F.
0.0.
If we're bragging about being better than Illinois, that's like, again, being a D student and saying you're better than someone who's an F. A great example, though, is how much big business in the Indiana Chamber controls public policy in this state. And it's right now with this vaccine mandate bill, in which these lawmakers put forward a bill that would prevent, you know, certain vaccine mandates, force employers to acknowledge certain exemptions, medical, religious, etc. And they did this because for 2 years they'd heard this from their voters. We want this. Well, they put this bill forward, and in comes the Indiana Chamber of Commerce. And all of a sudden in November, whoa, yeah, we better hold off on this. We're in the middle of February now, and they still don't have a consensus on what they want to do because they're totally beholden to the Indiana Chamber of Commerce.
Okay, so So, but this is one instance, right? And this, granted, this is a really big violation, right? Violating bodily autonomy. But in general, don't these organizations like create a very beneficial tax base for companies to come here? I mean, are you just... The rap on you, Rob, in the elite circles of Indiana is that you're...
I mentioned in the elite circles of Indiana?
You're obsessed over.
Oh, no way.
You are. Oh, God.
No way.
Oh, yeah. No, because what I'm trying to do is trying to say to you what I hear about you to give you an answer. Because when you talk to Rob privately, he's a very thoughtful person. On the air, a complete moron and idiot. On Facebook, it's even worse. But, you know, when you talk to these folks, they say, listen, yeah, nobody's perfect. We're just trying. It's really hard to scale back government. I know we have a supermajority in all these three chambers and the Supreme Court. But Rob's just bitching because he's trying to get an audience. He's trying to go after Holcomb because it's entertainment. You know, in reality, isn't Eric Holcomb better than Governor Whitmer? You know, you can complain about the entrenched power of the chamber all you want, Rob. But by and large, don't they do a good job at trying to make this a more economically free state? We're number 7 in Reason's or Cato's Freedom Index in terms of states. Like, what are you looking for?
Well, okay, number one, I don't accept the fact if things can be better and they can be much, much better here that we just go, oh, well, it's better than Whitmer. So what? Look, so here's a great example. And by the way, the reason I am the way I am is because I did it. I wrote the largest municipal property tax cut in state history. I did it. I cut taxes 4 years in a row. I funded over $50 million worth of infrastructure. And all those things when I ran, people told me, no, 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 you can't do. You can do it if you want to do it. And a great example of this is what the Republicans are doing right now with the tax cut. In 2017, Holcomb's first year in office, despite nobody in the Indiana General Assembly running on tax increases, we were told was that there was going to be tax cuts. They passed, they being the Republicans, the largest tax increase in Indiana state history, the tax on gasoline. It was an initial 10-cent increase, and it goes up every single year without discussion. There's no accountability from NDOT. How was the money used? Do we need more money? Do we need less money? Every year it goes up, and they go, oh, well, it's indexed to inflation. Really? That's what we think is acceptable from Republicans and conservatives? Ah, it goes up for inflation. There's zero sense of accountability there. And what happens then, piggyback on top of that, in 2018 or 19, Holcomb comes out and did what I declared the war on truckers, which was he just arbitrarily raises toll taxes by $1 billion. Well, the money ends up going, a big portion of it, to trails and fiber for internet. Well, now you see all of these ads from Holcomb about how many trails they are. I'm getting awards from trail associations. Indiana's leading the nation in trails. They never mention how they did it, which is a $1 billion tax increase on every single Hoosier. When they talk about these road projects, they didn't make government reforms to find the money like people like I had to do. They stole it from people. And they never have the guts or the testicles to say, we're doing this, but we stole this money from you. You judge it that way. They never have the guts to do it.
Well, if you look at like the stadium strategy, the sports strategy here in Indianapolis is the crown jewel. So you have this downtown core, you have the circle, you have basically just hookers and drugs on the Indianapolis circle in the 70s. And Dick Lugar is mayor, and they build Market Square Arena downtown for the Pacers. Then they, and I've got a wheeze, I may need to get checked for pneumonia.
You are the sickest, you are the consistently sickest person I know who doesn't have a major underlying health condition.
I know. It's unbelievable. It's this stupid COVID thing. Yeah, and so then they build an NFL stadium for a sports team before they even have a team, and build the Hoosier Dome, and the Colts move here, and then they build Circle Center Mall, which Simon sold off today. Now, you know, there's 80,000 jobs tied to hospitality downtown. We have a thriving core. We have a thriving business environment. Salesforce owns the biggest tower. You've got tons of restaurants. I live 20 blocks north. I love living downtown. And so the cultural trail, millions of dollars to build a walking trail to connect all this stuff. There's no doubt, Rob, that like having trails and having all these things are what attract people to live here. and build a base. So how do we balance livability? Because what you're saying is, so no, my point is not to defend it. I'm saying like there is a legitimate argument in that the government spending here has made the city more livable, but there's always the other argument is at what cost, right? So when you say, oh, they're stealing this tax money from you, the establishment here says, well, Rob's not serious because look at how great our city is. And then they kind of repeatedly tell themselves how great this city is. You know, and that's what they run on. They run on how great the city is, this sense of civic pride. Like, and you've come into town and said, forget that. I'm not going to sit around and kiss everybody's butt and talk about how great this city is and talk about how great these politicians are and, oh, aren't you so wonderful? And you made a splash by saying, no, let's actually dig down and look at what's really going on and what is acceptable and what could be, and at some great personal cost. And they've sort of Joe Rogan'd you here. But, you know, when you're faced with that argument of like, look at how all this spending has benefited us in different ways, how do you respond to that kind of stuff?
Well, I think a great example of this would be what's going on right now. There's a bill, I think it's Senate Bill 390. I could be off on the number, but it's a bill that would essentially sunset the ability to bond off food and beverage tax. And that bill would sunset in 2042, which is conveniently, I believe, just after Lucas Oil Stadium gets paid off. And so,
you mean like the Hoosier Dome has never been paid off and we never touched the principal?
Correct. But so here's the hypocrisy of these people. In the mid-2000s, they ran out of money to fund Lucas Oil Stadium. And when they ran out of money to fund Lucas Oil Stadium, they had to go to the donut counties and said, hey, would you like to enact a food and beverage tax? Because, of course, you have to ask permission from the state of Indiana to fund a food and beverage tax. And what they said to these people is they said, look, we need money for Lucas Oil Stadium. So if you agree to opt into our food and beverage tax, we'll give you the ability to raise the food and beverage tax as well. So if you, the sales tax in Indiana is 7%. If you live in all the donut counties, except for, I think it's Morgan.
Morgan opted out. Morgan said, right. F you.
It's 9%. So they literally bribed under the cover of darkness these counties to take the food and beverage tax because they said, no, it's fine. If you get blamed for it, just say it's the fault of those pesky bureaucrats in Indianapolis who raised your taxes.
Well, what they did is there's 25% of the revenue in the state. It comes from Marion County, Indianapolis. And there is a lot of jealousy. You know, when I was executive director of the State Libertarian Party, the northern counties always were jealous of the Marion County. And that happens in every party. The politicians from outside the donut county, you know, outside Indianapolis run on, you know, Marion County gets all the spending and we're going to hold them accountable and we're going to get our roads built and forget them. And so it was a very controversial time because what they were saying is this benefits the whole state because we bring all kinds of people here. We bring all, you know, but the donut counties, especially, you know, the people in Hamilton County are the ones that go to the games and, you know, all these conventions benefit because, you know, if 30 miles away, they're going to stay at a hotel somehow in Carmel, you know, right? So all the tourism benefits us. So, yeah, they raise taxes on all the donut counties except Morgan County because we have something called home rule here. And this is actually a very beneficial thing in keeping taxes lower than other places. To get one county to get something like a convention center built, all the counties have to agree to it. So you have to get every state legislator that has run on, you know, a Tom Saunders in Newcastle that's run on, you know, keeping spending low for in Indianapolis has to agree to basically let you build a convention center. And so what happens is every town in Indiana used all the tax credits and tax revenue and COA increases and county income tax increases, I should say, to build their own conference centers, to build their own stadiums and sports stadiums. So, you know, the point, Rob, that you're making, I think, is like it didn't keep spending low. It just expanded it to all these different places like Fort Wayne, which used it to build Evansville. Richmond built a convention center and all that stuff.
Well, and so there's two things. One, they do all these tax increases and then they never tell you how they paid for it. The NDOT stuff, the roads, everything else directly because of tax increases. The trails and everything else directly because of the tax increases. And then in the case of the food and beverage tax, they bribed these counties to do this when they were up in between a rock and a hard place on funding their stupid stadium, giving a billionaire. They give a billionaire a free football stadium.
No,
think about that.
It's worse than that, Rob. Jim Irsay wasn't a billionaire. Jim Irsay comes to the town and says, the Colts are incredibly important to Indianapolis. You're going to be lost without us. We need to rebuild the Hoosier Dome because we can't compete. I need you to pay for it. And the state at first said, I don't think so. And so he basically started shopping the team around the country and strong-armed them into it, then cut this sweetheart deal with the guy who's now head of the Indiana Athletics Department, Fred Glass, where Jim Irsay gets a cut up to $3 million of every single event held at Lucas Oil Stadium. The day the ink was signed on the deal with the Colts and Jim Irsay, he became a billionaire. And he used that money to buy all this historic rock memorabilia. So this past year, he's come to the city and said, I want to build a museum for all this rock memorabilia. Build me a museum. And says, if you're not going to do it, I'm going to take it to Charlotte or Chicago and see who will give me free money there, too. And stuff it.
So for these people, the elites or whoever, and by the way, none of them will ever come have a conversation with me. I have the most powerful media platform, arguably, in the entire state, which is WIBC. And none of them, Todd Young, Todd Rokita, Eric Holcomb, on down the line, none of them will ever come have a conversation with me about it for everyone to hear. Theft is not noble. Theft doesn't make you a good government official. Taking from other people and giving it to someone else is not something that I judge you as having done a good job with your career as a public servant. So if they want to say that all I do is bitch, no, I'm telling you what to do. The food and beverage bill is completely disingenuous because now you're trying to keep other people from doing it, which is fine. I tried to kill it in my town when I was an elected official, but they knew people would get so addicted to the money that they would become obsessed with keeping it. And now that just conveniently when the Colts stadium will be paid off, well, now you guys can kill it. No more bonds after that. These people, again, they're disingenuous. They're hypocritical. They're goofs. They're not very bright. Can I tell a story about how uninquisitive these people are? Chris, is that all right? So when I was still an elected official, there was a bill. It was Senate Bill 118. And it was a bill that was going to gut tax increment finance districts across the state of Indiana because Luke Kinley, who was a Noblesville senator, was mad that Carmel kept doing Carmel stuff and blowing past Noblesville through creative use of their TIF district.
They've spent like $1 million per arch for their arts district, massive bond spending. And these municipalities basically just continue to increase bonds and debt that they're never going to pay off. They're just going to keep rolling it over.
Right. But the point is, Carmel's a bad actor in this. People like Brownsburg, I use tax increment finance for infrastructure, which created close to $500 million now, or more than that now, actually, in economic development, which is funding tax cuts and keeping taxes low. So the point was, if you want to punish one bad actor, fine. Point is, Luke Kinley knew as a Noblesville senator, he couldn't get this anti-Carmel bill through the legislature because everybody saw for what it was. Noblesville guy mad at Carmel. So he goes to another senator by the name of Pete Miller, who was our senator here in Brownsburg. And he goes, you want to rise in leadership? Miller was a career, you know who he is, Chris, a career political stooge.
Lion and Pete.
Old Lion Pete. And too bad the guy after him was even worse, old Lion Crane. But anyway, he went to Pete Miller and said, you want to rise in leadership? You're going to carry this bill. And Pete Miller said, well, yes, sir. And we went to him because he represented Brownsburg, Avon, Greencastle, all these areas who were using TIF in the right fashion to fund infrastructure that the community needed, and said, wait a second, buddy. You're going to gut your own communities to carry this bill? And couldn't get any traction. Finally, I got a meeting with him. And this was two or three days before the vote, the end of the session. And I'm up there in his office for about 30 minutes. And finally, he looks at me and he's got all these bills up on his wall. They're all tacked up in those little cubicles that they have up there. And he goes, he finally just looks at me and I can tell he's just annoyed that I'm there because he knew what he was doing and I knew what he was doing. And he wasn't going to change. He looks at me and goes, you see all these bills I got to get through? And I looked at him and I said, yeah, you only got 2 days left. How are you going to have time to read those?
Right.
And he just stares back at me. And it was like a light went off in my head. And I looked at him and said, oh, that's the secret. You guys don't read anything. You just vote how you're told to vote. And this is what people need to realize. You have uninquisitive, largely unintelligent, politically obsessed people who are making decisions about what you can do with your life and in your communities.
Power hungry.
Yeah. And again, if any of those people that you talk to want to dispute what I'm saying, I'll give them the forum. But nobody ever does. Everybody's Johnny Tough Guy in those quiet circles. But nobody's ever got the guts where everybody can hear what you have to say to come on and refute what I say.
Well, you just don't get it, Rob. You just don't get it. You don't read. You don't have the conversations at Nikki Blaine's that they do. You don't have the right networks. You're not talking with the incredibly wealthy on a consistent basis, who are the ones that make the nonprofit decisions about where money's going to go. In education, the biggest foundation in the country is here, the Lumina Foundation, which was basically Sally Mae rolled itself into a foundation and now funds all kinds of education stuff. The whole nonprofit world, it's not like Indianapolis is a great city compared to other places because we don't have a lot of partisanship, which is another criticism of you, is that by being a libertarian voice on the radio, you're breaking down the conciliatory nature that has made Indianapolis a great city and making it more partisan and dumbing it down, they would say. Why are you so partisan?
So isn't this crazy, though, that, and I've heard what you've said from other people, and again, it's sad people don't have the courage to come say it publicly or say it to my face. But think about this. I'm a radio broadcaster. I can't raise anyone's taxes. I can't fund any public projects. I have no control over anyone's existence. And I'm one voice. And these people are so thin-skinned that one voice, a midday talk show host calling them out, and this is what they sit around and obsess about. But what they also recognize is they saw what happened with rainwater. And they saw people are beginning to wake up. And I have a vessel because I don't play the game. I don't care if I ever get invited to a Lincoln Day dinner.
A huge vessel.
It's huge.
Your board is tiny, but your vessel, you have a big vessel.
It floors me. So this is another great example. So rainwater gets, hundreds of thousands of votes. They're mostly from Republicans who walked away from the party and voted for Libertarian. The Republican response in 2021 wasn't, man, we really made a mistake. We really, no Sagamore. That's right. If anybody deserves a Sagamore, it's me. The response from the Republicans wasn't, man, we really offended a huge block of conservatives. We need to figure out why that was. Let's try to understand and listen to them. No, they sent a stooge out named Ethan Manning, who's a state house rep from, I believe it's the Peru area. And he puts a bill forward that would require libertarians to get 4,500 signatures to run for statewide office. This is the arrogance and the conceit of these people and the total lack of self-awareness. People didn't run to Rainwater because he was, the next coming of Jesse Ventura. Don's a great guy and he was a good candidate. They walked away from the Republican Party because they don't like you. But instead of owning
it, he had a better solution.
Exactly. They don't like you. They're tired of lockdowns. They're tired of business closures. They're tired of mass mandates. They're tired of the spending. They're tired of the taxes. And instead of owning that, they send this kid, Ethan Manning, out there and go, put this bill out that would require libertarians to get 4,500 signatures to run for statewide office. And once again, thankfully, people like Abdul and myself got wind of it. And we were able to, talk about it and get it killed. But this is who runs our state.
Yeah, so for people that don't understand, Indiana has automatic ballot access. You get 2% in the Secretary of State's race. It used to be 0.5%, and then the Libertarians did well, so it got raised to 2%. And if you get 2% in the Secretary of State's race, you get automatic ballot access for every Libertarian candidate in the state. Republicans and Democrats have to gather signatures, 500 signatures, in every single district to get on the statewide ballot. And what Manning was saying is that it's unfair that they get an advantage if they're going to be big time now. I hope that the next statewide candidate gets 13%, but it could have just been a moment for voters. And so Manning was saying it's fundamentally unfair. What's unfair, Rob, is when a Republican doesn't get 500 signatures in the first district, for instance. What happened then, Rob?
Well, if Susan Brooks' husband is your attorney and maybe someone on the election board who decides your fate made a donation to your campaign, well, it's close enough. Now,
right.
Danny Niederberger, who's trying to get on the ballot to run against Todd Young in the U.S. Senate primary, may have come up short in a couple districts by a few signatures. I wonder if Todd will be as gracious, if indeed that is the case, to allow Danny Niederberger to run against him.
2012, Jim Wallace is running against Mike Pence for the nomination of the Republican Party, and he fails to get 500 signatures. To get 500 signatures, you need to get 1,500 if you're an independent, because they're going to throw out the majority of those. And they just managed to figure out enough reasons to throw out the ballots for Jim Wallace so he couldn't primary Mike Pence. Fast forward to, was it 2016 and Todd Young, was it 2018?
2016.
Todd Young is four short in the first district.
Yeah, three signatures short, yep.
A heavily Democratic district, but lo and behold, the head of the largest law firm, the man that runs the political machine, the man that is sitting in Washington, D.C. while Mike Pence is vice president, collecting $50,000 checks for dinner so you can get access to the vice president, who is also on the election board, was it?
There was a donor. No, I don't think that person.
I'm not going to say that name because of but don't say the name. But yeah, he was instrumental in making sure that Todd Young got on the ballot, and instrumental in making sure Jim Wallace didn't.
It's a Christmas miracle, and it keeps happening. And here's the thing: so when people want to talk about why are you the way that you are, the Republicans made a giant mistake in the mid part of the last decade and accidentally let me into their club. And I think part of the reason they did that is, oh, we got to have a couple token conservatives in here, and Kendall's young, we can warp him, and he's just conservative enough that people go, see, we let conservatives in. And I saw how these people behaved. I saw it. I worked at the State House. I worked at the Government Center. I was the State Pharmacy Board Director.
Yeah, you got one of those cushy patronage jobs.
And I was completely miserable and had to quit because I was going to die of a heart attack soon if I didn't get out of there, because every day was fighting with people. Because I admit it. I'm a recovering Mike Pence fan. I clearly admit that. When he ran for governor, I bought his bullcrap. I believed the speeches. I believed we're going to go in there and reform government. We're going to storm the Bastille. Everything is going to be great. Let's go. And then you get in there and you realize they really don't want to reform government, because if you reform government, let the hamster off the wheel, then people don't need the government and you don't have as much power. And I spent 2 years in state government fighting with people every single day. And I really hope Mike Pence runs for president in the near future so I can tell some of these stories, because I think CNN would love to hear them.
Well, Mitch Daniels legitimately reformed state government, and he nearly lost his reelection. Like, people don't realize how much of a cost Mitch Daniels paid to try and for educational reform. You know, Tony Bennett lost to a career teachers union person, Glenda Ritz, as punishment for the reform. And it wasn't elites and big I mean, the elites here in Indiana are all for educational reform and charter schools and all that. It was the teachers unions that went and punished Mitch Daniels and not Jim Banks, that nut. It was just regular people who have been fed BS. So, you know, how do we start rolling some of this back? I mean, I think you've had some success in just kind of giving sunlight to some of this stuff and not being a shrinking violet, and not really, like, have you suffered any kind of personal cost for taking on the local political establishment?
Well, you know, Nathan Hale once said, my only regret is I have but one life to give for my country. So I feel like I'm sort of maybe in modern day.
You're Nathan Hale. Yeah.
I don't know. George
Washington over here with his.
What's the worst someone could do to me? I mean, I don't get to be on the radio anymore. I mean, I love radio, but I mean, it's not life or death. I mean, I'm not a politician. I don't seek the approval of the voters. If only there were some way to measure a rating system to measure how good I'm doing every single month, so people would know
every week.
Yeah, my ratings are. Here's
which those meters just keep going. Oh God, not again! I've never seen ratings meters turn suicidal like they do here in Indianapolis, but it's unbelievable. Can you please turn on the Heritage Morning Show? I can't take this anymore.
People have got to, because I hear this all the time. Well, I can't vote for a third party because it might let the Democrat in. So what? What would there be more largest tax increases? More businesses have been shut down in 2020? Would more than a million people have been put out of work? I mean, you got to keep in mind, Holcomb tried to put you in jail for not wearing a mask. Curtis Hill is the only reason that that's not in the criminal code right now. Holcomb arbitrarily.
Really? Explain. Oh, yeah. That.
Well, so Holcomb came out with one of his executive orders and said it will be a whatever, some misdemeanor or whatever, if you don't wear a mask during his arbitrary mask mandate. And Curtis Hill issued an advisory opinion, said that's completely unconstitutional. You can't do it. And within hours, that was pulled out of the executive order. Hmm. And it wasn't the Indiana General Assembly. It wasn't anybody other than Curtis Hill who came out and said, at the request of, I think it was Kurt Nicely and John Jacobs, to issue the opinion, you can't do that.
What happened to Curtis Hill? other than what show was Curtis Hill on? I know I mentioned it, but he was on some documentary looking goofy.
He was on Tiger King, wasn't he?
Tiger King, yes, that's it. Tiger King 2. Yeah.
So he this is why the Republican Party will not take on Holcomb, because Curtis Hill was an example. So this is the great thing about the Indiana Republican Party. They had the first African American ever elected to statewide office. He got more votes than any other Republican in the state of Indiana, including Donald Trump. Blew Eric Holcomb out of the water, not even close. They now have a diversity, it's not commission, it's a diversity class or club or something that the state Republican Party runs to, because they want more African Americans and minorities involved in the party. Eric Holcomb, Connie Lawson, Brian Bosma, the leadership of the Republican Party convicted and sabotaged Curtis Hill without trial or discussion, despite the fact that he was cleared of any criminal wrongdoing. He was cleared of any ethical wrongdoing. The civil suit against him was thrown out. The only thing that got him was because attorneys, and people laugh about this, are technically held to a higher standard than regular people. He was slapped on the wrist by, I believe, the Supreme Court because he did not uphold the standard for attorneys in Indiana.
Because he had allegedly been at a bar and had sexually harassed some staffers, or what was the original claim?
Right. Yeah, he allegedly put his hand on a staffer and was intoxicated at a bar. But in the system in which we live, if there's no criminal charges, if there's no ethical charges, and the ethics officer was appointed by Holcomb, so you know if there was one to find, she would have found it. And there's no, and even a civil lawsuit, the judge said, get out of here. But yet they completely sabotaged that guy because Curtis Hill had the audacity on multiple fronts to challenge Eric Holcomb. And taking out Curtis Hill and putting Todd Rokita in there was about sending a message to Republicans in the House and Senate, do not cross me, this is what will happen.
And now we've got Todd Rokita. Mm-hmm. Now, Todd is the guy that appointed me to a state commission. I was the
How did that happen?
Todd and I were friends. And I don't know what you think of Todd Rokita, but Todd's not liked by really anybody. I was one of the last people to kind of go, yeah, maybe you're all right about this guy. He's the new attorney general and who's constantly, like, you know, sucking up to Trump's fan base with all kinds of different things. Like that, so Rokita would come on and co-host, would guest host Abdul in the Morning when I was producer. You know, when we became friends, and when I was executive director of the Libertarian Party, he put me on the HAVA Commission, the Help America Vote Act Commission, and I was the swing vote. And, you know, you're on these commissions determining how to spend funds, and it was a moment for me where you're kind of like, all right, we've got 12 things the feds have mandated we fund for voting. And they're going to give us money for two projects of the 12. And they're going to financially penalize us if we don't do the other 10. But we don't have the money to do the 10. So what do we do? And there were some... The Republicans wanted to do something that was just not beneficial for the voter. And I was the one that was the swing vote that tilted it in the favor of everybody else.
Can you imagine having to suck up to you for anything?
Could you imagine? And here I am. I'm like 300 pounds. I don't even own a suit. I'm showing up in like dirty tennis shoes.
Tie-dye. Like,
I just think back to my career at the LPIN and what a joke I was. Like, oh, I was just such a fat mess. It was just disgusting. What a bad representation. I was great at the job. Don't get me wrong. The best years were 08 to 12 for the party. But
now, Harry, you're a super fit dude. Is there ever a time where you look back on old photos of yourself and say, what was I doing with my life?
Not really. I just look at them and go like, man, I miss being 7% body fat. Uh-huh.
No, Harry's always been super hot.
Yeah. I was like, you know, sometimes I look at like even some like mode, like I found like a notebook of like what I used to eat. And I was like, man, I couldn't even imagine trying to eat that much food right now.
Yeah.
Anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt your moment in the sun.
And then Rakita, you know, started going after the debate commission, which is like one of the fairest, most open. Like, the libertarians are in the debate no matter what, and then he was trying to blow it up because he didn't think it was fair because he got asked a hard question, and I'm just like, what? So now he's attorney general, but he's, you know, the hard part about so much of this, Rob, is, like, I know I'm not a progressive in any way, shape, or form. I know I'm not a Democrat, and I know I'm not a Republican because I so often hate them too and always have, because much like you, I went through the 2000s and I was in the rooms, right? Election night, I'm sitting next to Brian Bosma, the Speaker of the House, the most powerful man in the state. Like, I'm watching from the inside how all this works. And then I became a reporter for WXNT, and I saw even further how both parties work. And I'm just like, there's got to be a better way. And that's why I took the Libertarian Party of Indiana job. And I'm not going to say that the Libertarian Party is always the better way, but at least you don't feel like you need a shower at the end of the day when you vote for a lot of their candidates.
I love that your show is called We Are Libertarians, and arguably no one has done more for libertarianism than you, and yet you are hated by a huge portion of the Indiana Libertarian Party.
Isn't that hilarious?
I love that.
And it's because I tried to save them from themselves in 2016. Jim Wallace had some allegations against him that were really ugly. And my then co-host, I was friends with the Indiana Republican Party political director. I knew what they had in their drawers, and I had to save them from themselves at a great personal cost. I still love all those people. I still am friends with many of them. But there are a lot of old-time libertarians that hate me because I understand how politics works, and it's memes. Memes are what people... I knew years ago that the way to get people's attention and try to persuade them is not through long philosophical discussions. It's through making them laugh. It's through giving them quick hits. It's through new media. And a lot of people who are stuck in the 1990s mode of politics don't get that. You know, how can you be Howard Stern and still be a respectable libertarian? Because the Libertarian Party of Indiana has fought really hard for legitimacy. And they have felt that the We Are Libertarians podcast network and its co-host and myself have undermined that respectability. And that just couldn't be further from the truth, because when I go out and I sit with names that are now very powerful people, they all read my feed. I mean, if I told you the names of the people, it wouldn't mean anything to the audience, Rob, but you'd go, yeah, that guy's a political insider to the max. Like, that guy's making the decisions for the elite. They all read my Facebook feed. They all subscribe to my podcast. They all want to know what I'm going to say, because I am, like you, an idiot, but there's an entertaining layer to it that gets you got to get attention in the attention economy to bring awareness to these big issues. Because, like, I was on your show. I'll be on your show this week.
Monday.
And I'll podcast that. And the reality, you ask me, like, why don't the local media report on Holcomb, and why do they carry water for him? And the answer is they're clickbait mills. They're only giving people information that they know will get a click. Oh my God, the huge thunderstorm. Oh, look at what Pat McAfee did, and look at the Colts, and look at that. It's clickbait. And so to get attention for the issues that you care about, you've got to talk to people in a way that they want to understand. They want to hear it a certain way. They want to laugh. They want to be entertained. You know, and there are definitely times we took it way too far in the 2015 to 2017 era, trying to find our way, Harry.
Just a little bit.
You know, trying to get Greg Lynn's investigated by the TSA and NSA probably was a little too far.
But think about, and there's a whole bunch of things you guys did that if you had to do it over again, you probably would. But think about the friendships and bonds that came out of it. And,
yes,
you know, you guys really got me in many ways starting to think a little differently.
To pull back the curtain and look at what's really going on. You know, and you don't have to go full QAnon to like look around and go, things aren't right. I, Larry Kehoe here writes, shouldn't the name of this podcast be more along the lines of Weird Disgruntled Republicans? Yeah, I am a longtime disgruntled Republican. I make no bones about it. I am a libertarian, but I am a right-leaning libertarian. I always have been. I make no bones about it. I came from the Republican Party. I look at Mitch Daniels with reverence and not hate. I'm always going to be that way. I'm clear about my bias, and I don't care if you don't like it. Fuck off if it's not your cup of tea. I'm going to get along with everybody. I'm going to go sit down and have lunch with some of these insider Republicans and be cordial, respectful, be friendly. I'm going to have, you know, people, they all ask me about Rob. How can you be friends with Rob Kendall? Because Rob is actually a really nice guy. He's not as stupid and as vile as he is on the radio. He's actually an intelligent person who knows what he's doing. He just understands politics better than you. And the wave of change in how people are reacting and relating to their government has not reached a lot of these people yet, Rob. They don't understand. As much as I hate and loathe Jim Lucas, Jim Lucas understands how politics works better now. I mean, he just does. And I don't like it. I don't think it's good. But that's where we're headed, is the Jim Lucases of the world are going to eventually start being in charge. That's why I hated Donald Trump, and I don't know why you love Daddy so much.
You know exactly why I loved Trump. It had nothing to do with his politics. It had to do with the fact that our country is run by people who would be great cast members on The Sopranos. Yeah. They are mafioso figures. They have done very little, if anything, for the American people. They've totally enriched themselves. That's why so many go in regular people and walk out millionaires. And Trump made all those people miserable, and no other Republican probably could have won anyway. So why not enjoy the guy making the people miserable who have made the country miserable?
Yeah, but you put one mob figure in for another? That's what I never got.
No. Here's the deal. Trump did do some really good things. Trump did some bad things, but Trump did do some good things. Trump was just his own worst enemy, and that's why if you actually want a conservative in 2024, you can't nominate Donald Trump. Ron DeSantis is far more conservative than Donald Trump. He's far more effective at governance than Donald Trump. But Trump served his purpose, which was, this country has been run and ruled by absolutely terrible people for generations, and he pulled a lot of that curtain back. So I feel like mission accomplished. You can thank me later.
All right. Well, I just noticed what time it is. I'm so sorry. I agreed to get out here by 11. So, I agree with you. The Republicans will never win with Trump again. He that last year, it's not like he was good before, but that last year was just such a wreck and such a disaster. And I see libertarians like, to me, your point is well taken. It's like, but the left is not good enough, right? Like, so what if Nancy Pelosi's in charge? It's no different than Donald Trump, who wants a bigger stimulus. So yeah, I think you're right on. I appreciate what you're doing. I think you're giving people a model for holding local governments accountable. Start a podcast in your local area, show up to city council meetings, and start talking about this stuff. If you get 200 listeners, Jeremiah Morrill is the Joe Rogan of Newcastle. Everybody listens to that guy. He is the Abdul of his local town. He wields enormous influence because, you know, 400, 500, 600 people in his town listen, but that's like a majority that can tilt things in the balance towards libertarian principles. Start a podcast, start a radio show, get a weekend show like Rob, get on the lowest rated AM station in your town to get experience until you can get it. But how do people do what you do in holding local government accountable? You tell us.
Well, okay. So first of all, I want to thank you and Harry and everybody who's been a part of We Are Libertarians for all these years, because you guys were doing this years before it was cool or hip. I remember doing, I guess, what was an early days of Zoom call with you guys back in like 2012. I was like, who is this weirdo? We've been friends ever since. So thank you to what you guys do. The biggest issue is to get involved. You would be amazed at what two or three people can do if they put their minds to it. I mean, a great example, much of this opened for me because one day I just said, I'm going to run for local public office. And I had a campaign of basically two or three people who did all the doors with me, and we won. And that was the catalyst for me for everything going forward. You can help people. You can, like you said, think about a podcast. If you reach 200 people, they can then reach 200 people. Whatever it is, whatever free time you have, and I'm not saying you should not spend time with your family or be a good parent or anything like that, but you have the ability to make change. You just get involved. Just get off your ass and go do stuff. And Chris, if you would, these people, please tell them I'm desperate to talk to them in the Republican establishment. I have so many conversations I need to have.
Isn't it hilarious that I have become the establishment? Isn't it hilarious that I, who have virtually no power, and I have to thank, I won't thank the person that brings me to all these circles, but, you know, and I don't hate any of these. They're all really nice, and they all think they're doing the exact right thing.
This is the amazing thing about you. We've switched places. When I first met you, I was in elected office, and I was like, wow, that guy's kind of extreme. And now the roles have reversed, where you are the one who goes to the dinners and the dances and the fancy gatherings, and I'm the guy on the outside shaking my fist at everyone. So it's been an
interesting education to sit across, like, railing against the cultural trail and then meeting the guy that's responsible for it and hearing his rationale for it. And I don't agree with him, and I don't think it was the right call. But you do, like, start to see, like, oh, these people aren't evil. They think they're doing the right thing. They just don't understand the cost, the true long-term cost of their decisions, because they're seeking the immediate gratification and glorification in that moment, trying to be significant in this period of time and not looking at the long-term effects of what they're doing.
You make such a great point. I'll leave with this because I think you just hit the nail on the head. I've said this about Eric Holcomb for years. Eric's problem is he's never worked a real job. And every job he's ever been in, the money's just always been there. Head of the Republican Party. Oh, money's there. Right-hand man to Mitch Daniels. Oh, money's there. Work for Dan Coats. Oh, the money's there. So when Eric Holcomb shuts down tens of thousands of businesses or puts a million people out of work, it's fine. The government will take care of it. You know, it's fine. And why are people so upset? The government's going to pay these people not to work. It'll be fine. The real-world impact gets lost on these people, and I want to say it's out of a sense of naivety. I don't know how a guy who went to Wabash, you could say that he's, you know, a sense of naivety. I mean, it's a great education, but it almost is. It's not, I don't know if evil's the right word, but I mean, the fact that there are people that are this unlearned and this stupid running society is scary either way.
Yep. And I will just say that, you know, it sapped some of my heat and my anger, but you've helped get some of it back. You know, it's hard to hate people when you're talking with them.
Yeah. God bless you and God bless Harry. And thank you for letting me be on the show with you guys today.
All right. Thanks, Rob. Thanks, Harry, for being here and being a pretty face. We'll talk to you all next week.